Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Jason Harris. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, I spoke with Philippe Spies, MD, about penile cancer for our Rare Cancers series. Dr. Spies is a genital urinary oncologist and the Assistant Chief of Surgical Services at the Moffitt Cancer Center, as well as a full professor of oncology and urology at the University of South Florida Morsani College of Medicine. Penile cancer is extremely rare in North America. The American Cancer Society estimates there will be 2,070 new diagnoses and 470 deaths from the disease in 2022. Penile cancer is curable if caught early, but for a variety of reasons, including a lack of familiarity, many patients present with advanced disease. Moreover, there are few systemic treatments available, and surgery is often described as mutilating. Because the disease is so rare, there is a lack of clinical research, and as a result, treatment hasn't advanced in a decade. In our interview, Dr. Spies discussed his involvement with an international consortium that seeks to establish standard treatment for penile cancer, the ways shame interferes with diagnosis and treatment, and the complicated issues of gender and sexuality involved with this disease. Dr. Spies, thank you for joining us this afternoon to talk a little bit about penile cancer.
Appreciate the invitation. Thanks, Jason.
Relative five-year survival has dipped from 67.7% from 2000 to 2004 to 65.7% from 2010 to 2014. Why have we seen poorer survival in that five-year period?
Yeah, you know, one of the greatest problems we have with penile cancer is the significant underreporting of penile cancer in many parts of the world. Honestly, even incidence and mortality rates in many parts of the world are really challenging to interpret. Most of the studies which have looked at this, and there have been a few, really have shown ultimately a net zero difference in outcomes in terms of survival, in terms of mortality rates. And the simple reason I think we're seeing that, unfortunately, is that we have not developed nor have we identified very effective systemic therapies for patients with penile cancer. So oftentimes we can cure early penile cancer, fortunately, but when patients have advanced disease, I think we're still very challenged in identifying good chemotherapies or immunotherapies or combination treatments that are going to be very effective for patients.
Is there a standard of care for systemic treatment?
There is. I always like to caution people when I say this is there is. Platinum-based chemotherapy, the regimen we often talk about is TIP, which stands for paclitaxel, ifosfamide, and cisplatin, is the standard for four cycles in patients who were getting it in the absence of cancer, which has spread beyond the lymph nodes. But that study, which resulted in this becoming what I would say is the standard of care, was based on a landmark phase two trial of only 30 patients. So I always like to take a step back and say, that's not a lot. That's why actually there's a major international collaborative going on, which I'm fortunate to be involved in, looking and getting us real-world experience with this regimen of chemotherapy and really having a better understanding ultimately of how effective these treatments are and ultimately looking at new treatment options and opportunities to improve how we care for patients.
Talk a little bit more about that international consortium. Have you found any results yet, or are you still compiling evidence?
Good question. So this study was really been a challenging one because it is an international effort to really look and standardize treatment, whether that be surgery, radiation, or chemotherapy, and to look at it across global institutions that see penile cancer. So far, we've accrued close to 54 patients in North America, and the Europeans are now hovering around 25 patients, so at about 80 or so patients worldwide. The accrual goal for the study is 200 patients, so we're hoping by 2024 to meet our accrual goal. And looking at the trajectories of accruals, it looks like we're likely going to get there. So far, we haven't had any interim analysis of the data or anything like that. All I will say is that this study, I think, is going to set up really, in my mind, benchmarks in terms of how we do the surgery effectively. Also identifying centers of excellence for penile cancer, not only North America, something which has never been done, but across the world. But I think also the goal and the focus of this committee and this initiative is to really, this will result in centers that are going to be dedicated to subsequent phase two and phase three clinical trials in penile cancer. So I think I think a lot of good is going to come from this. I'm glad our European counterparts and the NCI have partnered to look at this. And I've been very fortunate to be involved and part of the leadership team for this trial.
Sticking with the need for clinical trials, obviously it's a rare cancer. It's going to be difficult to attract research subjects. But beyond just sheer numbers, what are the other obstacles to enrolling patients for these trials?
There are a few. One is, as you mentioned, is there still is a significant subset of patients with penile cancer being treated in the community. The great question there is, should these patients be sort of sent to centers of excellence in the area? NCI designate cancers or centers who are clearly are able to sort of care for patients with higher quality care just because of the experience, both in terms of surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation, how they do it. So I think that's one of the challenges is we need to, as a community, do a better job in sort of getting their care in certain centers where there's the volume. We see that Europeans have done a really good job with that. I think in North America, we struggle with that a little bit. And in South America and many parts of the world, we have as well. The other big challenge with this is there's really a under recognition from patients, from primary care physicians, and from even urologists, to be totally honest with you, on what penile cancer, how it presents. So oftentimes patients will present late at a stage where, unfortunately, many of the times they may not be curative. There's a great need and I think an initiative to elevate education related to these rare cancers. And I've been involved with a society specifically dedicated to that, which from a full disclosure, I was one of the founding members in developing a society. It's a nonprofit. But I think what we're trying to do is improve education of patients through patient advocacy and also through education of urologists and other healthcare professionals around the world. And it's actually been really very effective because we have many parts of South America and India who've engaged with us to try to get this material out to patients and physicians.
You mentioned that patients often present late and men notoriously resist seeking medical treatment and don't really like talking about their genitals with doctors. So does shame play a role in patients seeking treatment and then just even reporting that they have a problem?
100%. I think that is very, very accurate, Jason. I think many people are very embarrassed. Many people don't think penile cancer is an actual physical entity. They think, you know, there is no such thing as a cancer of the external genitalia. Unfortunately, we do know that that's clearly the case. Oftentimes, they're misdiagnosed as infections and sometimes are treated with antibiotics for many, many weeks and months. I just saw a 23-year-old. You know, very rare to see these young patients with penile cancer. The 23-year-old was treated with antibiotics for 6 months until he presented with me. And, you know, I think there's a glaring understanding and information that these are real things. And the bottom line is if patients have these sets of lesions, they need to be seen and oftentimes need a biopsy to establish a diagnosis really early on.
When a patient presents with advanced disease like that, what, if anything, can you do for him?
So it's a balance of two essential elements to me. Obviously, in the oncology world, our goal is always cure. So my focus is, can I cure this patient first and foremost? And then the second question is, what can I do if I have several options? What can I do which is going to maintain and preserve sexual function and quality of life for this patient? You know, one thing with this type of cancer, which is underreported, is the implications it has on not only how patients identify themselves after they've had sometimes, unfortunately, fairly mutilating surgery of the penis and that area, but also how it affects their sexual identity, their relationship with their partners. What I do in my practice, and several centers have started to do this, is I have psychosocial counselors and sexual educators work with the patients. We screen them for depression, for suicidal ideation. That's something which has not been done traditionally very frequently. I think we need to be very aware and supportive of our patients, understanding how this is going to affect them, and this is going to be for many, many years to come.
Do gender issues play at all into treatment? If you're seeing a transgender patient or a non-binary patient, does that affect the course of treatment?
It's a really good question. I would tell you that it does. I've had a few patients with those specific issues that have arisen, and obviously you need to be sensitive to those. I always like to say, I'd like to get a team of not only social workers, but psychotherapists and sexual counselors engage in the care of those patients just to make sure that we holistically approach them as well as their partners, to make sure they're involved in all decisions we make related to treatment, but also the consequences of the treatment. And how this affects how they identify themselves and how they relate to their partners, because those are really, really dramatic potential effects of the treatment. And I think if we're going to treat our patients in a holistic way, we really need to make that a central component of it.
So when it comes to treating patients, we saw not that long ago the Pericles trial looking at atezolizumab with or without radiotherapy, and it failed to meet its primary endpoint for PFS. Is there a future for atezolizumab or any future at all for immunotherapy in this disease?
So that's also a very good question. I would tell you the verdict is still out on immunotherapy for penile cancer. We published a paper a couple of months ago with several colleagues at my institution at Moffitt. We showed that in patients who are resistant to platinum-based chemotherapy, we had a subset of patients who responded to pembrolizumab and actually fairly effectively with durable responses. I don't necessarily think immunotherapy is, the smoking gun, the cure for many patients with penile cancer. There's a paper that I just collaborated with some colleagues in Asia on looking at a combination of immunotherapy with platinum-based chemotherapy with an EGFR inhibitor and with really meaningful durable responses at about 2 years. Probably the best data so far in terms of complete responses. It was a small phase two, so I think we have to see the phase three. Hopefully we'll be able to report out in a few months, but I think it's going to be multi-agent combinations, probably with IO, particular patients who are PD-L1 positive, HPV positive, and MSI high.
Along those lines, what research are you looking forward to seeing reported?
Good question as well. I think there's a few areas where I think there's a significant underreporting in penile cancer. One we're talking about is the impact in terms of quality of life, in terms of what we can do that can impact patients dramatically in terms of improving overall how they feel, how they do, and how we provide ultimately best support for those patients. The other one, which I think is a critical area, which is an area of focus of mine as well, is can we standardize not only treatments like, and what I'm referring to is not necessarily whether we do surgery or whether we do radiation or chemotherapy, but how do we standardize how we care for our patients? We published a survey study about a year and a half ago. And what we found is that even among patients that underwent surgery, when we looked at oncologists across the globe, there was a high degree of heterogeneity on how we do things, meaning how long we give antibiotics, how long we leave drains, what do we do in our patients to improve their outcomes, how we survey patients. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to standardize those things and do it in an evidence-based fashion. The last but certainly not least thing is how do we improve multimodal treatments, which this impact trial study we were talking about earlier is going to help us answer, but also developing novel new therapies for patients with penile cancer.
Is it a challenge to attract not only participants, but also research funding?
That is a huge, huge unmet need. I will like to say that I applaud the NCI in the last year. They've started to emerge new specific grants related to rare cancers, including rare GU cancers, which I think is very critically needed. There's been a few studies which have shown this, is that the outcome for many rare GU cancers have not improved over the past 20, 25 years for the simple reason that it's really quite difficult to conduct clinical trials or to do some foundational type research in this area just because of the funding unmet need. I do applaud Europeans. They've had over the past 4 or 5 years this initiative called eUrigin. What they basically did is they gathered specific dedicated funds for rare cancers, not only rare GU cancers, but all rare cancers across the board, and identified centers of excellence, but also identified novel clinical and study questions and are funding those. So I think I'm glad the NCI, and I think we're doing that now in North America, because I do think there's a really critical need, because much of this research right now is not being funded at all. And oftentimes it's being done just through people's other research initiatives or as basket trials or other initiatives such as that.
This disease is very rare in the West, but in developing countries, specifically Brazil, India, Eastern and Southern Africa, it's significantly more prominent. Is there any research being conducted in those areas? And if not, how do you increase the diversity in, the developing world where you've got more access to clinical trials?
That's a critical need. And that's something this Global Society of Rare GU Tumors that I'm affiliated with is specifically focused through really collaborations, particularly in parts of the world where there's underreporting and I would say underrepresentation in clinical studies. Like you mentioned, several of those, South America, India, Africa. Bringing them in as part of these research collaboratives, but also working with them to sort of learn from their experiences and incorporating in the clinical trials as much as retrospective and prospective studies, as well as education initiatives, are going to be very, very fruitful for the global patient community impacted with these cancers. I will say that many of those areas of the world actually provide good quality care, but oftentimes we don't really know that much about that just because, unfortunately, there's been an under publishing of many of these projects related to these areas. And I think that's what we're ultimately trying to do at this point, is make sure we are able to learn from their experience and hopefully engage them further in future studies.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Pediatric cancer is an area where I'm very pleased to see there's really some great research being done, fundamental research being done right now. Some of that being done at our institution. I have some really talented research collaborators, Dr. Daniel Grass, Dr. Jad Shahood, and also some wonderful international collaborators we're working with. We're developing penile cancer cell lines. We're developing xenografts. We're developing novel compounds specific to penile cancer. And I think those are going to definitely be very promising, and I think are going to help us elevate the quality of care of patients in the months and years to come.
That's all we have time for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, and thanks again to my guest, Dr. Philippe Spies. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.